This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
When we talk about the conversation, it is usually that far too late talk about sex by parents with their kids who already know all that. Today we are going to relabel the conversation a little bit. It's an inner talk that you have with yourself and maybe a careful dialogue you could share with close friends. And the question is touchy and it's heavy. Knowing the climate is going to be wrecked with huge consequences for humans and for nature, should I bring a child into that world? Or as journalist Madeleine Ostrander puts it, how do you decide to have a baby when climate change is remaking life on Earth? That's the title of her latest article in The Nation magazine. Ostrander is also a contributing editor at Yes magazine. Madeleine, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
All right. Now, to talk about this, Madeleine, I find that I have to bring up my own thoughts and worries. Do you find this subject hits deep with some people?
It does, particularly a certain segment of people, I would say. Of course, people who are in their childbearing years. And, you know, the Yale Project on Climate Communication has divided particularly the American public into kind of six groups in terms of their positions on climate change. And there's a group called the Alarmed, which is about 13% of Americans. And these are the people who take climate change most seriously and know the most about it. And I would say that this conversation is probably hits the hardest for that group of people.
I guess others would simply brush off any mention of climate change or fears for their kids' future. Have you encountered that?
I have encountered that some people really aren't thinking about it. I don't know whether they brush it off or not. It's just that people go about their lives and they're aware of climate change, but it's not real for them. And I think there's a segment of people for whom it is somewhat real, and a segment of people for whom it's very real. And for that latter category, I would say that those are the people who are most concerned about how climate change is going to affect their families.
And I noticed early in your article you talk about Paul and Ann Ehrlich's dire predictions in the 1970s. I admire both of them. I've interviewed Paul Ehrlich, but I have to say their future of horror and famine didn't come true, at least not yet. Is that a bad example?
Well, I brought out that example because I think that the conversation that Paul Ehrlich started in the 70s still informs how particularly environmentalists talk about the question of having children. So when people talk about the ethics of having children, and then actually it's not just environmentalists. I mean, people will talk about overpopulation. People will talk about whether or not it's morally right to add another child to the world because of the number of people who are already on the planet. I think that the conversation is shifting a little bit. I think even among population advocates, it's shifting somewhat so that groups like Population Connection, which is the new name of the organization Ehrlich founded, Zero Population Growth, now talk about population in a systemic way, and they talk about human rights and women's rights and bringing healthcare to people and allowing people to have more choices. And that turns out to solve a large chunk of the question of having too many people. And I think what now we have to wrestle with is how we're actually living on the planet and how the ways that we're living on the planet are contributing to climate change. So my article was an effort to try to shift that conversation to some degree or to acknowledge that there are new pieces of it that we need to talk about.
What are you picturing in the climate-changed future that brings you such serious doubts?
Well, as a journalist, I spend a fair bit of time talking with scientists because I write about these issues on a regular basis. And scientists are doing a couple of things. One is that they're more and more using high emission scenarios because that's, as a society, what we've been doing. So scientists are now often looking at the worst case scenarios, the most extreme scenarios for what could happen in the world. They're also getting more and more precise about the kinds of predictions they can make and the ways that they can paint a dire and fairly specific picture of the possible impacts that we could have happen. So, for instance, there was a paper a year ago about mega droughts lasting several decades across the Southwest and California, that has really serious implications for water shortages in that part of the world, which, of course, has serious implications for agriculture and our ability to feed ourselves. There was another report by the New York City panel on climate change saying that we could have superstorm Sandy-style flooding in New York City on a regular basis by 2050. And when you think about 2050, any kid who's born now is just going to be in their 30s. So that means that your life could be marked by these extreme events, and that's a frightening thought for me, and it makes me think about what kind of future could I promise to anyone that I might bring into the world.
Madeline, our parents and grandparents went through the Great Depression and then World War II, where 60 million people died. Is the climate future worse than that?
I guess I would say that I think that the climate crisis is unprecedented in human experience. I think that when you talk to scientists, they will tell you that the kinds of scenarios that we could see would be unprecedented in terms of what humans have been able to deal with and experience. And so if we don't address the issue now, we may not be able to adjust and adapt effectively. We may not be able to thrive and survive. And so I think that it is a different scenario, and it requires different thinking than even a situation in which you're confronting something like major conflict or warfare.
I totally agree. I mean, one of the scariest aspects of climate change is that we have nothing in the past to compare it to. I just spoke to a scientist who said, well, going back 66 million years, we've never had such a fast injection of so much greenhouse gas in such a short time. Nobody knows what's going to happen, and that's another big worry.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, when you're thinking about becoming a parent, you have to make decisions now without knowing what the future is going to look like for you or for your kid. And that's really scary. And to some extent, I mean, that's life. You always have to make decisions not knowing what the future will look like. But I think you don't always have to make decisions with this big shadow of these very troubling scientific predictions hanging over your potential life. And it makes it difficult to think about what is the right thing to do.
I find we tend to make a lot of choices based on our memories. And if you could give me just a minute to share mine, I think that develops into a sort of second question. So beyond the personal decision to have a child, I'm thinking about when I was growing up. I did have children, incidentally, and they revolutionized my life. Now I'm worried about my grandkid. But most Americans and Europeans never experienced what I had as far as nature. I mean, there were empty lots. It was safe to go play in them all day without adults watching. There were woods within walking distance. We went to the lake all summer. I feel like I'm a sibling with nature, but now with people in big cities, millions and millions more in big cities, they're never going to experience that. So my question is, perhaps we could say even without climate change, there are reasons not to have children in this civilization at this time. How do you feel about that?
I think there's been this concern for a long time. When I wrote this article, I did some research and I looked up some of the groups, environmental and population groups of the 70s. And people said, in a way, they said similar things. They said, I don't know whether it's reasonable to bring a child into this world, given everything that's wrong with it. There are also reasons to have children. One thing I think is that it's important to recognize how personal and deep and difficult this choice is for everyone, and to respect the choices that individual families make and give them the space to reflect on these kinds of issues. I think that in the best scenarios, having children gives people a connection to the world and to the future and a sense of a stake in what happens in the world, and a reason to be passionate and get involved and to have love and joy and all of the things that are part of being a human being. There are certainly other ways to do that, and there are many reasons why. Yeah, sure, having a kid might give people pause.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Madeline Ostrander. She's a contributing editor at Yes Magazine and a writer for The Nation. We're talking about the big question, should we bring another child into a world when the future is threatened by climate disruption? There are a few pockets of natural sanity left in all countries, and I'm thinking that women from Beijing to Berlin are asking themselves the question, is this the place to have a baby? It's sort of a where question. I wonder if that figures into this conversation as well.
I mean, I can't really speak for, you know, women around the world, of course. I can talk about how in the article that I wrote, I attended these events that are being organized by a new group that started up out of the East Coast. It's called Conceivable Future. And there are groups of women and men getting together and talking about these very issues that we're talking about on the show. And you will hear in those rooms a very open and compassionate conversation, all different kinds of perspectives about what people feel, you know, how they feel they should make this decision. I heard a mother who was pregnant with her second child and had a toddler at home talk about how she wanted to think about how to teach her kids the kinds of skills that they might need to confront a lot of uncertainty and to confront the difficulties that the world might present them. And she had gone into that process and that decision very thoughtfully. I heard other people say that they weren't sure if they wanted to have children. I heard people wrestling with the decision. I heard people who said that they had actively decided not to. I've also heard from people both before and after writing the article talking about how they made a choice to adopt or they made a choice to be part of helping raise children in a different way, maybe looking after godchildren or, you know, being involved in raising the next generation in a lot of ways. So I think there's a big diversity in the kinds of choices people can make about this. I think what's new is that people are starting to have this thoughtful conversation about what the future of the world looks like because of climate change and how might that affect their childbearing choices.
Do you think, given that politics is currently almost in a state of denial, at least in one party, about climate change, and the mainstream media just blathers on about everything else, that this conversation is being driven underground, that it's kind of unpolite to mention it at dinner or at parties or at work or at school or anywhere?
It's definitely impolite to try to have this conversation. It's a really difficult conversation. One of the things I reflected about in the article that was in The Nation is that people would sort of whisper this conversation to me for a few years anyway. People I knew would say, I see what's happening with climate change and it makes me not want to have children. And then maybe they would still have children, but they wouldn't talk about their decision-making process. People would sort of murmur this idea to me and then they would change the subject quickly because it's an uncomfortable and scary and difficult and very personal thought. I don't know if it's being driven underground by the political context. I think it's just a set of topics that we're not very comfortable talking about. But I think that it's a really important conversation because when you talk about climate change, not in terms of some abstract idea about future generations, but in terms of my own children and what kind of lives are they going to have, it becomes much more deeply personal. And when we start asking those kinds of hard questions, we begin to take the problem more seriously. And my hope is that having that conversation doesn't send it underground, but actually brings things up to the surface that people haven't been talking about yet.
And we know that just a century ago, there really was not much choice for a woman and very little for men either. It was part of human duty to have children. And it's still that way for billions of people in many parts of the world. So it's going to be a while before this becomes a global conversation.
Sure, of course. Even in the United States, there are women who don't have a lot of access to things like contraception and healthcare. And so there are many people who don't have the choice about whether to have children. They have a baby and then they have to think about how they're going to manage. There's ways in which this is a somewhat new situation that we have a substantial number of women in Western and developed countries who do have the ability to make this a choice. And that's part of what makes this conversation and this moment different as well. Millennials in the United States actually have a lower fertility rate than any previous generation in American history. And a lot of that is because of economic reasons. But it signals this shift in the ways that people are making this decision, I think.
And I just read that in the United States today, almost half the babies were born unintended. So a conversation and the decision never took place.
Right. Well, I think part of the conversation as well is not just how do you make this decision, but also once you have children, how do you think about what their future is going to be like and how do you act as a parent? And so those two conversations become bundled together in this discussion about climate change and the future and how are we a part of it?
Madeline, have you seen any poll or survey or research to indicate how many women or what percentage of women are doubting the future enough to reconsider having children?
I looked for that information, but I think that it's not a question that's necessarily on the radar yet of people who do polls. So I think that there's data out there about who's having children, and there's some data about how certain kinds of factors, like the economy in particular, might be influencing their views about the world. But the environment, I feel like we don't really even have the right language for talking about these questions that we're raising, you know, on this show right now. I think we're just starting this conversation. How does this fate of the world affect your decisions about having children? So, no, not yet.
Well, it is the start of a conversation, but millions more people are learning about climate disruption all the time, despite the Koch brothers. And that means that what is a minority now may be the cutting edge. Who knows who could define a whole new movement or a current among human beings? Do you think that can happen?
Yeah, I think that one thing I've noticed since I wrote the article, you know, which was we've talked about impolite conversations. I mean, it's a frightening thing in a way to put out a personal statement like that, and it's not necessarily what I even typically write, but I've had a big response, particularly from young women. I would say probably most of the responses come from women under 35, but even women in their 20s who are wrestling with these questions and felt like they weren't seeing anyone actually talk about them in a public way. So I do think that this is on the cutting edge, and I do think that people who are younger, who grew up with hearing about climate change their whole lives, have a different perspective on it than other people. And I hope that the conversation will keep going and will grow.
Where do men fit into all this?
Well, certainly men do fit into it. I mean, people make decisions as couples. And there were a number of men at, for instance, these events that I talked about where people were getting together and having these conversations about climate change. For some men, it seemed to be still a little bit more of an intellectual conversation than an emotional one. But I think when you're in the position of beginning to actually talk more seriously about having a child, it becomes more emotional and more personal and deeper. So, yeah, I mean, men are definitely part of the conversation. I think as a feminist, I mean, I guess I would say that the ultimate decision about whether you have a child or not should rest with women. But I think men are part of that discussion.
For sure. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions for our listeners on how we could start up these uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, so one of the organizations that I profiled in my article is a new organization called Conceivable Future. And they are starting these conversations all over the country. They host events in different cities like Los Angeles and Chicago and New York and Providence. So, you know, one thing to do would be to try to connect with them. But I think you don't necessarily need an official format to have a conversation like this. I think just creating some kind of safe space where people feel comfortable talking openly about this issue and know that they're not going to be judged. That was the premise of the events I went to. So I think it's possible to start this conversation, and I think it's important. And I think what I've discovered is that people are actually longing to have this conversation.
Well, we have listeners in small towns in Ohio and Kansas. Are there online resources that they can find?
Sure. The organization that I was just mentioning is called Conceivable Future. And if you Google that, you will find their website. There are other organizations for parents and children. There's a Northwest-based organization that is actually currently in the middle of filing a lawsuit against the federal government because they say that we have not done enough as a nation to safeguard the future of young people. There are lots of resources across the country for parents wanting to educate their children. There's also the organization Population Connection has a project called Population Education. And they have conversations in schools and with children about the issue of population and questions to do with having a child. So that's another resource.
Okay, as we finish up, is there any other parting advice you'd like to leave with us?
I think I would just say that I think that this is a really important conversation for people to begin having with one another. I think it's important to think, to be real about how climate change might affect your family, how it might affect the people that you love, how that might influence the decisions that you make. I think it's important to recognize that the predictions for climate change are coming within our lifetimes and could have huge implications on future generations. And I think once we take that seriously, I hope that it starts to transform the whole conversation we have about climate change and make it more possible to think in more personal ways about what it means and how do we make the kinds of changes that are necessary.
We have been talking with Madeline Ostrander. She's a contributing editor at Yes Magazine and contributing writer for The Nation magazine, where she published the seminal article, How Do You Decide to Have a Baby When Climate Change is Remaking Life on Earth? Of course, you can find more, including reader comments, at thenation.com, or try the links in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. Madeline, thank you so much for getting this conversation going.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.